When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
And this is London, but coming to you, of course, all over the world, thanks to the wonders of the internet. We'll be talking to the foremost American economist and political analyst, Professor Richard D. Wolff in New York City. And we'll be talking to our own Moats medic, Dr. Ranjit Brar, who's talked us through the coronavirus pandemic right from the very beginning. He's a man with an interest also in China, and it's China that we'll talk about first with Tom McGregor in Beijing. I don't know what time it is there. I have a feeling it's very early in the morning, in which case we're very grateful to him. And the proximate reason for that, of course, is the decision by the British government to kowtow low to the most controversial president in the United States political history, who might actually even be out of office before the order to ban Huawei, before the ink on that order is even dry. The British government earlier in the year decided to keep Huawei in the 5G rollout. But now they say, citing security concerns, that they can no longer do so and have, in fact, therefore ignited a trade war with China. Just as we are looking over the abyss after the coronavirus into actual economic collapse, just after we have fallen out with 27 countries in the European Union who were our biggest market, the British government has now added China to Russia and the 27 members of the EU as people were either on non-speaking terms with or sending gunboats to their maritime perimeter. I'm not making that up. We have dispatched our only aircraft carrier to the waters around China. What could possibly go wrong? Well, the last time we dispatched a gunboat up the Yangtze was in 1949, and the Chinese Navy promptly sunk it and called it the Yangtze Incident. And it caused a lot of trouble here in Britain. We weren't used to whippersnappers like the young Chinese People's Republic sinking our gunboats. But of course, China has come a long way since 1949. So has Britain, but in the opposite direction. And so dispatching a warship called after Her Majesty to China is a decidedly risky enterprise, and we better hope that nothing goes wrong. When we get there, of course, we'll be joining a veritable fleet of American warships with strategic bombers from the United States Air Force flying overhead. As I say, what could possibly go wrong with all of this? In the middle of a trade war, in the middle of a propaganda offensive of unprecedented ferocity, we're actually sending military assets into harm's way. And for what? Well, I can think of only one reason: because Donald Trump wants us to. And the only reason Donald Trump has gone on the warpath with China is to divert attention from the Democratic Party's attack on him as a Russian agent, as a Manchurian candidate. How crazy is it that the richest country in the world, the most powerful country in the world, is actually confronting two nuclear-armed superpowers only for the reason that the other party is targeting a different nuclear-armed superpower? Joe Biden, in the basement tapes, still sleepy, still creepy, is pumping out, would be the wrong word, squeaking out his anti-Russian propaganda on a daily basis. So Trump has gone on the warpath against Beijing, whatever the cost to the ailing US economy. And of course, that ailing economy is what we will be talking about later. But what about the British economy? Can we afford to be making all these enemies? China, a country of 1.4 billion people, might have been a tasty market. Certainly, that's what David Cameron and George Osborne believed it would be when they launched what they called the golden era of British-Chinese relations, now in absolute ruin. China is going to retaliate, and I think fearsomely, against the British economy as a result of this slap in the face over Huawei. But is it deserved? We're asking in our poll, why did Britain cancel the Huawei 5G deal? Was it A, security concerns, or was it B, political machinations? It has to be B, really, because if China was a threat to our national security through Huawei on 5G, we wouldn't be allowing them still to operate on 4G. We wouldn't be allowing them still to operate on 3G. We wouldn't be allowing them to operate our trains. And we wouldn't be allowing them to operate our nuclear power stations. So it's safe to let China operate our nuclear power stations, but it's not safe to let them platform Baby Bus and Peppa Pig or whatever else you watch on your 5G mobile telephone. When you put it like that, it just seems utterly ridiculous, does it not? And if China was a threat to our national security through 5G, well, we'd be banning them now, wouldn't we? Not in 2027, when I promise you 5G will be very last year. So get voting on that poll. Why did Britain cancel the Huawei 5G deal? A, security concerns. B, political machinations. Now, there's no need for you to have one eye on BBC One, because I'll be keeping you updated as to the score in the FA Cup semi-final, because somebody is keeping me updated. And some social arrived already by email. Jim says, you remember last week we talked a lot about the Maxwell affair, the Ghislaine Maxwell affair, and my part in the downfall of her father, Robert Maxwell. Jim says, quite surprised to read that the court refused Maxwell bail. Perhaps the authorities are going to play it tough. Mind you, the same news item I read stated that the feds had to break into her mansion to arrest her, which I don't believe for a minute. I think they did have to break into the mansion, and that's one of the reasons why she didn't get bail. That and having a mobile phone wrapped in tinfoil in the vain hope that no one would be able to detect her signal. I don't know why they gave her, they refused to give her bail. I do know now that she's in mortal danger, and her suicide next week was very sad indeed. And on Facebook, Asif says, I think the establishment will look after Ghislaine, like Prince Andrew. The powers above probably spent the last year preparing her. It's a joke it took that long to bring her in. So in any case, it will either be brushed to one side or she'll suddenly disappear. And Robin says, what does Boris have to say about Huawei? I thought he questioned what alternative the United States can provide. Well, there is no alternative. The downside on top of all those I mentioned of dropping Huawei from 5G is that we will not get a 5G rollout for 3 years. 3 years it has set us back. Anyway, that's about Boris. Lex says the big problem with COVID in the US, that there's so many people without health insurance who dare not visit a doctor and actively will not go to any health institution because of the risk of a severe and unreasonable financial mugging by them. This is suggesting the infection counts could be missing one third to three quarter of the data. Well, if you think about it, there were 60 million people in the US who didn't have healthcare insurance. On top of those are those many millions of the newly unemployed whose healthcare insurance was tied to their jobs. And Carmen says, I'm not convinced that the names of the so-called elite appearing on recorded tapes will ever be revealed to the public. Maybe a few names, but not all. I'd be interested in any names at all. Why did Britain cancel Huawei? Security concerns, 34%. Political machinations, 66%. You can vote now on my Twitter feed. Now, Tom McGregor is an American conservative. He's not by any means an enemy of Donald Trump, but he lives in Beijing. And so he's having to reevaluate life, not just because he's living so far away, but because his president, the one I'm pretty sure he would have long supported and would have enthusiastically supported in the November election, has declared economic war and maybe more on the country in which he's living and into which he is married. He's Tom McGregor, top man. He's on the screen now, I hope. Tom, thank you for joining us at what I'm sure is, if not an unearthly hour, an inhospitable one. Now, let's talk about the British first. Were you shocked at the British government's, unwarranted, but certainly earthquake-making decision on Huawei this week?
No, I had predicted this a few months ago when I was talking to many Chinese people. I was also talking to some, let's just say, important people in China, and I had warned them that the United Kingdom, Brussels, the European Union are also likely to start to place some more restrictions on Huawei. What's going on is that many countries are starting to worry a little bit about China. Washington has power right now. The U.S. is the largest consumer market, okay? So because countries can make more money from the United States by exporting than they could to China, you're going to see right now a lot of countries follow suit and sort of support the Washington for this moment, and that would also include Huawei issues on Huawei.
But will that still be true when the American economy is falling off a cliff? I mean, how many imports are American consumers going to be in a position to buy now? There's 30 million people unemployed. There's mass poverty in the United States. So will that calculation continue to be true?
Well, another major issue that I've had to focus on, and I talk to a lot of people who are just focused on money issues. And what I'm telling people now is the big trend is known as localization. Every country is going to try its part to improve their manufacturing base. They're going to do what they can to manufacturing inside. So make local, sell local. You're going to also see this in the United Kingdom. I believe you're not right now, but soon you'll see this happening in the European Union. And this is exactly what's occurring right now in the United States. It's a major trend.
I'm all in favor of that, aren't you?
Sure.
I'm all in favor. I mean, it's ridiculous that we are depending on China, for a plaster for our cut finger. Ridiculous that these long lines, supply line chains, have become so globalized. I'm against globalization.
Yes, I know, and I appreciate that, George. I've seen some of your comments. I fully support a lot of your what you're saying about localization.
Now, tell me this. What conceivable truth can there be in banning Huawei for security reasons? when, as I said in my introduction, they're still in 4G, still in 3G, still running up nuclear power plants. So how can there be a security concern about people watching Peppa Pig on their phone?
Well, maybe you should have been asking Theresa May about that. Theresa May was really into this. She was pushing these deals before Boris Johnson. But of course, you know, in China, what's really happening, of course, they're going to support Huawei. But at the same time, I believe this localization is a major trend. So the weakness right now is how, what is the United Kingdom going to do to replace a Huawei? And they're going to have to rely on maybe European or U.S. Telecom technologies to do that. And it's going to put them behind another year or two to play catch up, because Huawei is right now the major leader in the field of 5G networks, and they're already starting R&D on 6G. I heard right now they, if they wanted to introduce 6G, Huawei could do it at this moment. But with localization, you're going to see this trend where companies are going to try to fight for their national companies first. I believe this is going to be a major trend for the next few years, and it's one of those reasons why I believe Trump is going to get reelected.
We'll come to that, but you discount entirely that there are justified security concerns for canceling Huawei.
That's not happening. Okay, first of all, and I've actually talked to technology experts in China. They have assured me that they Huawei has developed, and that they're also even working with Japanese companies to develop technologies that put a kill switch on them from spying. So even if they try to spy, there is a certain kill switch that can get turned on to prevent the information going to Beijing. That is absolutely not the reason, is not happening.
Moreover, the GCHQ, the British Intelligence Service, GCHQ had a real-time permanent audit on the Huawei's involvement in 5G. GCHQ could see everything in real time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the public are being cheated here in Britain when they're being told that the reason for this is security. Now, let me move on.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a lie. There's just no way. It's impossible. And even think about it this way. Whenever Huawei is selling a phone, they're selling tens of millions, hundreds of millions of phones. And you're going to get a lot of data come back to wherever they go into big data reports. How is Beijing going to analyze every single phone that is sold in the world? It doesn't make sense. It's outrageous. It's nonsense. I would have preferred if governments just said, hey, we're going to do the localization trend. Huawei, you're screwed.
Well, that would at least be honest, but we can't do that because we don't have the technology ourselves. We're going to cancel China and buy American or buy European.
Yeah. But localization has at least a decent argument.
Yes, quite so.
Yes.
Let me move on. What will China do to respond to this, not just economic warfare coming from Britain and the United States, for that matter, but the military maneuvers that I talked about earlier? We're sending our aircraft carrier to China's maritime perimeter, a perimeter which, of course, the U.S. has politicized and refused to recognize. So this is dangerous, isn't it?
Well, it's dangerous when bullets are being fired. You know, you can send ships all you want, but if they're not firing and they're just sort of playing war without actually doing war, it's not as dangerous as it may seem. Look, folks, if we were headed for war, I would not even be in Beijing, okay? So trust me, folks, this is not a wartime scenario. This is not a wartime preparation scenario, because if it was, it's game over for the world. Okay, we're headed for World War III if China starts fighting. But you're going to have certain types of situations where other countries want to show they're off their strong. So they send off their ships to sail around near China, and they're going to do their showing off. But as long as no bullets are being fired or nothing is being shot and nobody gets hurt, this is just little games that people play just to show off.
What about the economy then? Will they respond economically to the British decision on Huawei?
Of course, they will do some type of response because that's how China does things. They love that tit for tat response. If I was to be asked for any advice on this situation, I would sort of just let them leave it alone. Because look what happened with the U.S.-China trade wars. The more often that China responded, the more often Trump responded. Then you create a scenario where it ends up China hurts itself more. Because you got to realize that they're the world's largest exporter. They're the world's largest manufacturer. It would probably be in their best interest to find some type of compromise. Rather than to continue to escalate these kind of problems.
Now, you said earlier that you were still confident that Donald Trump would be reelected. How so? He's behind in every poll. He's behind in every swing state, even though he's fighting a corpse.
Well, the fact is fake news is fake news. The same polls that were saying Trump is way behind Biden were the same polls that said Hillary Clinton was going to win in a landslide, that she was going to win Texas. She was going to win all these states. Trump was going to lose bad. I mean, these are the same pollsters. The Democrats have learned absolutely nothing from their defeat when Hillary Clinton had lost. So they're just playing the same old games. Now, if the Democrats were actually serious and they really wanted to win, they would not have ever put Biden as their nominee, as a man who can't even speak a complete sentence and be understood by the public, a man who is hiding in his own basement, and he will not even debate Trump. Trust me, he will not do any of the three debates with Trump because he knows he's going to lose.
Powerful stuff, Tom McGregor. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the mother of all talk shows. Let's go to Wales and talk with John about Boris Johnson. Go ahead, John.
Hi, George. Good evening. How are things?
Good.
Boris Johnson is, you see, it wasn't meant to turn out like this. He's a neoliberal. He wanted to have Britain do Brexit, which I supported, but he wanted to go down the road of being this sort of kind of Thatcherite. We'll have a low-wage Britain, and that's a factory, is proof of it. But he wasn't meant to be like this for him. And he doesn't have the pragmatism to deal with the pandemic crisis. So, like, his lockdown was half-hearted. It came too late. Then there was the crisis with the PPE, and then there's the crisis in the care homes. And I don't really trust Matt Hancock to tell us the truth anymore. And then there's testing and tracing and tracking and all that. I just think someone else like Rishi Sunak will be better taking over, and maybe Boris can say to himself, well, look, I'm not really enjoying the job anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, I expected Boris Johnson to be a much more impressive prime minister than he's turned out to be. I saw him, of course, as the mayor of London, a kind of, I don't know, buffoonish, clownish figure. But I thought that the ambience of the chamber of the House of Commons would be somewhere that he would shine. I realise now that I actually didn't see him speak in the House of Commons when I was in it. He wasn't in it for very long while I was, and he was very junior then, so he didn't speak much. But I'm surprised at how poor at the dispatch box and in debate he is. He's quite lucky, too, because he's facing a corpse. Also, a man so wooden, the birds are trying to nest in him. But if he was up against anybody with anything about them, I think he'd be quickly found out. And I do think that quite a few Tories fancy Rishi Sunak, a man so wealthy that he probably doesn't even draw his salary and vast expenses. Oh, wait. I think that Sunak is a potential next leader of the Conservative Party, but are you really saying that that would take place in the lifetime of this Parliament? In other words, before the next election?
I'm not sure which way it'll pan out, but you see, Brexit will rear its ugly head again. If Keir Starmer says to the public, look, I promise you we won't go back into Europe, then Keir Starmer will be the next Prime Minister if there's an election, which is a long way off. But in the meantime, the Tories may want to say to Boris, look, old chap, you know, all the eating education is very good and it's good laugh and you're well-spoken and everything, but we need somebody who can really deal with simple things like the test, track and trace results going to the local health groups and testing me more widespread.
Yeah,
than
well, the devil has definitely been in the devil has definitely been in the detail for Boris Johnson on the coronavirus. Thank you very much, John. Appreciate that. Now, you can always count on a great deal of interest in Scottish independence out there in South Carolina. It's Mike again on that. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, George, good to talk to you again. I never miss your show, and
thank
I agree with you with almost everything, and even on the Huawei thing, I think this whole thing is ridiculous. It's just another way that America and England are trying to punish China. But
Mike, there's nothing in it for us. We don't have our own brand.
That's right.
We get rid of China and buy somebody else's.
It's true. But what I really wanted to talk about was Scottish independence. I called you late in the show last week. I only had a minute left and didn't have a chance to talk to you about it. But here's the thing, George. I mean, I understand, and I want you to understand, I do not have a dog in this fight. I could care less one way or other whether Scottish is independent or not. It's a national issue for you guys. But, I mean, if that were happening in the United States, we'd probably fight another bloody war, like the Civil War.
You definitely would. You wouldn't let California secede from the Union, would you? No.
So I really admire the fact that you guys can actually talk about this and really do it if you want to, okay? But here's the thing. I know that you said that the vote for Scottish independence 6 years ago was a referendum of a lifetime, okay?
No, they said that.
We're talking about
not a lifetime, Mike.
Yeah, we're talking about
Mike, not a lifetime. That would be ridiculous, although they did say it.
Okay, generation.
They did say it.
Is that good?
But they signed, sealed, but did not deliver a promise that it would be a once-in-a-generation affair.
I understand.
6 years
ain't
any kind of generation, not even a generation of domestic rabbits.
But here's the thing, George. Think about it like this. You did that 6 years ago, okay? And the Scotland decided to remain with the UK. Now, but just 2 years after that, the UK voted to leave the European Union, which in that same vote, the Scottish people had voted to remain with the UK. With the European Union.
If I was a blunt American, I'd answer that with, so what? But I'll be more polite. I'll be more polite. If you decide to stay in a country, then that country is who makes the decision as to whether or not you leave the European Union. You cannot have your cake and eat it. You cannot say we want to stay in Britain, but if Britain decides to do something that we don't like, and by the way, a million Scots voted for Brexit, that we want to reopen our promise that this would be a once-in-a-generation thing. What you don't understand in South Carolina, how could you, is the paralyzing effect of this never-endum on Scottish life, becoming more and more bitterly divided. If you don't believe me, I'll show you my scars, some of them sustained even this weekend, even this evening. The uncertainty, the bitterness curdling into hatred, vigilantes at the border, screaming at English people, get back to England. This is a disfigurement of Scotland, and it has to stop. We cannot allow this to go on year after year after year until the separatists get their way. That's where I stand on that. You are welcome to disagree. Unfortunately, I think Mike has gone. I want your telephone calls. The number is 02077982255 and the US number 001-757-744-4480. And Wesley says on YouTube, why do I trust the government of China 10 times more than I trust the government of the US? Because the Chinese don't lie to me every time they open their mouth. And Tim says, people who believe 5G fries you are dumb. They have no idea how a microwave works. And Malik says, 5G scares the cows. Our milk will be sour. And on Facebook, David says, I was torn, FA Cup semi-final or Gorgeous George. This is more compelling. Well, I'm very glad I'm not watching the FA Cup semi-final, I can assure you. Paul says, hi, George, you're the rock and roll presenter on Sundays on Sputnik. Thank you, Paul. And Rose says, I was always taught that it was rude to keep your hat on inside. Oh, do get a life, Rose. If you knew why I'm wearing a hat, you'd be embarrassed that you made that point. Why did Britain cancel the Huawei 5G deal? A, security concerns, 33%, down one. And B, political machinations, 67%, up one. You can vote now on my Twitter feed. About 1,000 of you have. Here's a call from Silicon Valley, no less. Masood on Huawei. Masood, go ahead.
Hi, George. I've been a fan, too. But I wanted to say something that's a lot more sinister and that's being missed completely. Mm. Huawei is actually an employee-owned company. More than 95% of the company is owned by 67% of the employees. And this is what makes it really a hungry company. And, you know, so this is really the core of the company. And yeah, it often gets missed. It really challenges the kind of the American corporate model. That's the point I wanted to make.
That's right. Is it 67%? I thought it was 75%, but you may be right. You're in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, something of the order of 70% of the employees own about more than 95% of the company.
Yeah. In that sense, it's a kind of a workers' cooperative. That would be a good reason for Silicon Valley to hate it in itself.
Right, exactly. And that often gets missed. And this is just a point I wanted to make.
And a very good, very well made indeed. Thanks for calling from California, Masood. Dr. Ranjit Brar is an NHS consultant, a physician, and a surgeon. And he's been our go-to throughout the coronavirus crisis, which, despite what some people would like you to believe, is far from over. And I'm glad to say, if there's one upside to the coronavirus, it's that we've all got to know Dr. Ranjit Brar. Dr. Ranjit, thank you very much for joining us. What can you tell us about the impact of the breakdown of lockdown? Because it has effectively now broken down. Pubs are open, restaurants are open. A friend of mine was on the London Underground coming to work this evening, and reports that virtually no one was even wearing a mask. It's as if it never happened. Is there any discernible impact of that on the figures?
George, pleasure to be back with you again. Thank you so much for having me. I think the situation on a world scale is truly scary at the moment, George. It's as you say, the virus has not gone away and it's got a long way to run. So in the world, we're seeing 14.5 million cases and 610,000 deaths. And perhaps we'll talk about the United States a bit later on, because there it's really running out of control. Here, it's quite clear that lockdown, as you say, has effectively ended. People are going to restaurants. I mean, some people are wearing masks, some aren't. The rules are opaque. People are themselves confused. Even if you're in a hospital, the rules about processing of patients and wards and PPE change on a daily basis. So no one knows quite where they are. Certainly true that essentially there's a far greater degree of social intercourse, and the British government themselves are concern, giving their mixed messages, wanting to get the economy sorted out. But of course, there's a global capitalist economic crisis, which they're powerless to affect, really. But at the same time, concerned because they realize now overwhelmingly that there is going to be an increase here as well. I think Chris Whitty was quite clear when he said in September there will be a large increase in cases. He said it very openly. It's unavoidable, and we can expect a large increase in numbers September, October, November. And that's in line with the predictions we've been making based on the evidence that we've been seeing. But it's the most explicit recognition from the government that this is going to happen. They don't expect to have a vaccine ready in time. They're expecting to see a great increase in numbers. People can't be expected to make up their own individual rules. If they're pressured to go back to work, they will go back to work. Economically, they need to do all they can to try and secure their living. But of course, it puts the population at risk. And as we've said, the vast majority of the population haven't been exposed to the virus and remain vulnerable, George.
Now, on that point, let's deal with that point first. If Chris Whitty is right, is the National Health Service capable of dealing with that large increase that he didn't just predict, he stated as a certainty?
It's a very good question. So, essentially, there's been the mantra from our government that their principal aim in the way that they've dealt with the crisis has been to stop the NHS from being overwhelmed. It's my contention that the NHS absolutely was overwhelmed, and it was overwhelmed, and that's reflected in the fact that all other elective services and a skeleton were closed down, and really only a skeleton emergency service was provided. That's in line with the expectations that if we were to meet a pandemic as modelled and tested on a national scale during an operation in 2015 called Operation Cygnus that we've discussed before, overseen by our previous health secretary, essentially showed that the NHS would fall over and did fall over. So I don't think that we do have the capacity to deal with a large increase, as we didn't really have the capacity to deal with it in the first place, other than by shutting down our already, you know, a vastly overstretched NHS. We've seen that there are now 10 million people waiting for appointments and procedures in the NHS. It's an unprecedented number. And that really is an indication that the NHS has failed to cope. It's failed to cope because of a deliberate process of running down capacity with a view to forcing people into private insurance and advancing the agenda of privatization of the National Health Service, George.
Well, I'm one of those in that sense. My wife is going to give birth any day, any hour, any day, and we are doing it at home, a home birth, something I thought passed into history when I was myself a small child. I myself would never have considered that. But if it was the choice of having a home birth or going into a potentially deadly hospital overwhelmed by coronavirus, it was a no-brainer in the end. And there are many people we know have died, cancer patients, for example, who have not been going into hospital because the hospitals have been overwhelmed. I'm just wondering if September is as bad as Whitty thinks it is, we'll be back to where we were, back at the very highest point of this crisis.
I think that's right. I mean, home births, of course, have become very fashionable. And for those who are very well and are lucky to have a midwife in attendance, then it can be a good environment in which to have a baby. It's not my first choice, I think, because precisely because childbirth is so high risk. But at the present time, the balance of risk has changed, I think, with coronavirus. And everyone is doing everything they can to avoid attending hospital unless absolutely necessary. And that's understandable to a degree, but it's also an indictment of the way that we have organized the health service during this. We learned that the government are basically in talks to continue to buy up all of the unused capacity in private health service. So they must be paying billions for that. And we've seen that this week, revelations about billions of other contracts to firms who are unable to supply goods and services, but billions nevertheless having been passed to them, all in secret, all without scrutiny, all under this current legislation pushed through on the back of the coronavirus pandemic. And we're seeing that increasingly. So it's reasonable for people to try and avoid hospital. But the fact that rather than use other centres, so we really needed from the very beginning to have centres separate from the main NHS that were dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. And that would have been the sensible way to approach things, rather than funnel the coronavirus into hospitals where there are vulnerable people, funnel people from hospitals into the private care system where there are even more vulnerable people, not protecting the general population, not putting testing, tracking and tracing, and social isolation facilities at the forefront has been our failing from the beginning. And all of that has been conditioned upon the way in which our NHS has been organised and the pressure it's under constantly to rationalise, downsize, make cuts year on year with a view to soften it up for privatisation. That's been our tremendous failing, and I fear that that will put us in a very serious situation as we approach the winter, George.
Now, you mentioned the United States. I said last week that if Florida was an independent country, it would be one of the most afflicted countries on the earth. Tens of thousands of cases a day, and that has not improved in the last 7 days. Rather, other states like Texas, like Arizona, like California have gotten very much worse. Why is it so out of control in the United States?
I think that's right, George. Florida has had 12,000 cases in a single day, and Florida has had 350,000 cases. So Florida has had as many cases of coronavirus as the UK, test-proven cases. And the United States on Thursday had its worst ever day, where it posted 77,000 cases in a single day. So essentially had the number of cases in a single day that China has had throughout the whole pandemic. And we've talked about, again, the reasons that underlie the US response. But now it's become at a certain level within the community, without there being an ability to stop it spreading in the major centers of population, where it is in an exponential growth phase, where the R number is very high, it's predicted to be around the 3 mark. And that really means that, you know, one person is passing on to 3, is passing on to 9, 27, and so on. So it's really a huge rate of increase. And it's very difficult at that stage to stop the disease from spreading. We know from the beginning why they haven't been able to get on top of it, and that's been conditioned by both the political system, the Trump administration, the poor political briefings, overwhelmingly the private medicine and the lack of access to medicine. And we've said it again and again, but it's worth repeating that the richest 3 people in the United States have the same amount of money, wealth, power as the poorest 200 million. And that's an incredible statistic. So it means that there's a vast underclass in the United States who really don't have access to the kind of first world facilities that you would expect to be present. And that's precisely, again, because of their insurance-based system. And that's the system, of course, we're driving towards in this country. Very recently, last week, they announced the closure of Epsom and St. Helier Hospital, for example. So there's a constant pressure to downgrade our NHS structure, huge numbers of contracts being given out to the private service. And everything is being pushed in the direction of us following in the footsteps of the United States. And particularly at this time, you couldn't really think of a worse way for us to go in our healthcare provision. And of course, amidst all of that, the level of aggression, the rhetoric against China is really stepping up almost onto a war footing. And we know that Huawei, you've just been talking about, the contract has been cancelled. But really, there's a trade war, a global economic war, a war for the minds of people that is going on and underlying this crisis. So while the United States is unable to look after its people, it's constantly pointing the finger of accusation, in particular at China as being its largest global competitor, the new workshop of the world. And it's desperate to sanction other governments, including the UK government, to stop us from doing trade deals. And it was disappointing, perhaps not unexpected, to see Lisa Nandy, even the Labour Party shadow foreign secretary, actually embarking on that war rhetoric and trying to out out-Trump Trump, to outdo Boris Johnson, and accuse the government of not being hard enough, that the solution to all of this somehow is to be extremely draconian in our relations with China. And once we step onto that diplomatic footing, you know, it's preparing the ground for, you know, trade war, and trade war is the prelude to war. And we definitely want to avoid that course with a nation like China. It's not in the interest of the British working people, and it's certainly not going to help us cope with the corona pandemic, George.
Well, when you said even Lisa Nandy, I immediately thought that never was the word even more otiose than in the case that you cited. I'll be talking about China on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock online on all internet platforms. And I'll be expanding on some of the points that you have just made there. Dr. Ranjit Brar, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Mother of All Talk Shows. Why did Britain cancel that deal with Huawei? Security concerns, 33%. Political machinations, 67%, up one. You can vote now on my Twitter feed at George Galloway. Let's take a 60-second break. Sean is in Stevenage on the NHS. Go ahead, Sean.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, thank you. Apart from the result today.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I've been out and about doing things. I just want to pick up on what Dr. Brar was saying about these contracts being let to private firms.
Yeah.
As I understand it, there's some £5.5 billion worth of contracts let for procurement of stuff for the NHS, PPE, whatever. One in particular, there's an example on Craig Murray's website. He's done an excellent report and a breakdown on this particular firm. And I'm sure it's an example of how we're being robbed blind. This particular firm is an investment firm. It's a family office fronting their investment management. They have won a contract for £250 million. No competition tendering. Sole tender to that firm. They're an investment firm. They have no experience in PPE for the NHS. Why have they been given this contract? I'm sure, and I'm sure that there's an example in this other £5.5 billion, let alone, as I understand again, the £10 billion which has been wasted on that track and trace app.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This government and the people around the government have wasted no opportunity and yet again getting their hands in the till and robbing us blind. While this coronavirus epidemic is going on, while half the country's possibly going to lose its job, lose its livelihood, they've got their snouts in the trough and they're doling out contracts to people who've no business being in that line of work. I should know. I've worked in engineering jobs in construction and procurement, major EPC contracts in highly regulated industries. And I know that any medical devices or medical equipment is going to have certain standards and specifications. You don't give them to a firm that's got no history whatsoever.
Well, I don't know. We gave a contract to a ferry company that had no ferries.
And it's exactly the point. You've hit the nail on the head. It's that again, and on a massive scale.
Much bigger.
That was £50 million.
Yeah. Well, that's the call. That's the call of the night, Sean. I've said before, I don't want a public inquiry into the British and Scottish governments' handling of the coronavirus crisis. I want a trial at the High Court, at the Old Bailey. I want these people who are responsible for all of this to face justice. Thanks for the call. Tess is in Wales on China. Go ahead, Tess.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I missed out by Sean. That call spun me out. I forgot what I'm going to say. There's a lot of this propaganda, right, about China. There's loads of it kicking off all of a sudden. We had Andrew Ma earlier on talking to the Chinese embassy guy. I can't remember his name. And all those videos that are coming out all the time, right? I'm really worried that we're getting right into a war here, and the people are going to be happy to do it, because already everybody is up in arms about all this propaganda, which is what it is, isn't it? So,
well, how could we have a war with China? China could sink our entire fleet of aircraft carriers with one missile. When it reaches the South China Sea.
Well, it won't be just us, will it? We'll be ganging. We'll be on like America's side, won't we? Mm. We'll be their little chums. So we'll go in.
Well, you're right to be worried about it, because not least because when you collect a lot of military assets in one area, you're counting on the people whose area it is. Not retaliating against your presence. You're also counting on no accidents happening. You're counting on no commander going rogue. And of course, we now know that many times during the last Cold War, World War III could well have erupted, but for a bit of sagacity on the part sometimes of military officers, or a bit of sagacity on the part of political leaders in turning down the demands of military officers, we could well not have been here today, Tess. The world could then have been destroyed. But how, we've got to be lucky every time. And are we going to be? That's a big question.
I just hope that there are still some people around that will stop.
Well,
if it comes
I'll be
to
talking
it, like,
about this on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, Tess. Don't forget to tune in. Eves, thanks for the call. Eves is in Idaho on Donald Trump. Eve, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I wanted to discuss about your show, about Huawei. And, it was a very... there is, like usual, a lot of humor in that show and all that. But I think the situation is very serious, and you occulted it a little bit. And I want to give you, since I have very little time, I want to give you five things, and then we can go from there. Number one, you have Pompeo 1 month ago going to Israel. And for once, Pompeo say, I want China out of Israel. I don't want the Silk Road. And Netanyahu say, yes, sir. Two, you had some talk between Trump and Erdogan, and Trump told Erdogan, you can have your Ottoman Empire. I back you on Libya. So bad, too bad for the French, because the Ottoman Empire is directly against Russia and China. Three, he goes to England and he say, forget about Huawei. We want your ship in the China Sea. And they say, yes, sir. The fourth thing is going to go, they're going to go to Denmark and Germany and say, we don't want any of those Nord Stream. And I don't think the Germans are going to bow, but I don't know. And five, very importantly, and I think it was missing in your show today, is the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, which is, in my opinion, straight from the State Department. It directly put a new front between Turkey and Russia through Azerbaijan. And this is five. And what do they try to achieve? They have two goals in America. It's not a question of Huawei or anything. Number one, preserve the dollar as reserve currency, because the dollar is debased. And with this dollar, what do? They buy company for the intellectual property right. You see, that's how it goes. You have to, when you think about intellectual property, you have to think Alstom in France. That was a very good example. You have GE who bought a company, they fire everybody, they keep the patent, and now when we want to build turbine for our submarine in France, we have to pay royalty to America. I just wanted to say that.
Well, the Nagorno-Karabakh situation is a very serious one. Perhaps we should put it in its own right on our agenda. It's true that this very week, the Turkish NATO member was fighting with the French NATO member over Libya, where neither of them has any right to be, but both are there along with everyone else. Now, it seems, as a result of the disaster that has been visited on Libya, I saw President Obama say the other day, as he said before, but with more detail, that the intervention in Libya was the biggest disaster of his presidency, or as he put it, the biggest mistake of his presidency. So Libya, the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia are both a potential fronts, but the South China Sea is the most serious one because there you have U.S. strategic bombers, a whole fleet of American warships, soon to be joined by the British aircraft carrier Queen Elizabeth, in an atmosphere not just of trade war and absolute outright sanction, like the Huawei case. It's not that you can buy Huawei, but you'll have to pay a tariff on top. It's a straight ban. This is an act of economic war. And then, of course, the Hong Kong issue on top of that. This is all boiling up to a very serious situation, Eve. Last word to you.
Yes. Well, I completely agree. To add something about Turkey, you see, the way I think they distribute the role is that America is going to take care of China, mainly the U.S., but Turkey has a role of attacking Russia on three fronts, Libya, Syria, and now the South Caucasus. You
very interesting. Listen, Eve, that was a terrific call. Now, the doyen of economists and political analysts in the United States is undoubtedly Dr. Richard Wolff, professor of economics. And I'm very glad to say he not only joins me now, he's been waiting for a moment or two, for which I apologize, professor. Let's talk economy first and then politics, if we may. How bad is the American economy today?
Well, let's put it this way, George. I occasionally have cups of coffee with my colleagues on the right and in the center, and of course also on the left where I am. And here's what we say to each other. Even though we don't agree on how we got into the current situation, nor do we agree on how to get out of it. But here's what we agree. This is the worst condition of the American economy in our lifetimes, and most of us have white hair. So you can get the answer to your question is the economic crisis of this country is unspeakably bad. We have beyond anything that we have seen, at least as far back as the Great Depression of the 1930s, and in some ways already worse than that.
Adumbrate, if you will, the key statistics, unemployment, and so on.
I'd be glad to. Over 52 million Americans, our labor force is normally considered to be about 150 million people. Out of that, 52 million, more than a third, have had to file for unemployment insurance compensation over the last 15 or so weeks. We've never seen this kind of unemployment since the Great Depression. And even then, it took several years of depression to get that bad. This time, it only took several weeks of depression to get that bad. Number two, we have the greatest degree of debt, government debt, corporate debt, and private individual debt that we have ever had in the history of this country, and the debts are rapidly accumulating as I speak for all three levels. We don't have any precedent for this sort of thing. Number three, in a sign of how desperate the situation for us is, you have the Federal Reserve, our central bank, the equivalent of your Bank of England, has now pumped somewhere between $3 and $5 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars of brand new money into the economy in order, by flooding everyone with cash, to somehow get them to buy or spend that money and perhaps somehow, no one can specify how, to revive the economy. It has not worked, and this is my final point, because the money doesn't go to hire anybody, since with a third of your labor force unemployed, you cannot sell what is already in inventory, and it's not going to expand any business for the same reason. So all of that money flows into the stock market, where indeed it has pushed the price of stocks up, which means, since only about 6 to 7% of our people have significant amounts of stocks or shares in companies, what you are doing is further exacerbating the inequality. Think of it. The top 6 or 7% riding on a rising stock market alongside the vast majority of our people desperate, either because they're unemployed or because of the fact of unemployment, employers are everywhere forcing down wages and benefits, threatening their workers that if they don't accept it, well, there are plenty of unemployed people that can be hired. You put all of that together, and it's only the tip of the iceberg, and you get some sense of the desperate economic crisis we are living through.
How I wish you were running for president right now, but you're not, and we'll come to those that are in a minute. But many people in America, I'm sure, and many watching and listening to this show will imagine that this is all because of the coronavirus. But it isn't, is it?
Not at all. A very important point. The National Bureau of Economic Research, a government and well-established agency here in the United States, is the official record keeper. They're the ones who decide whether a recession or depression has happened, when it started, when it's over, and so on. They issued a report about 2.5 weeks ago indicating that the current economic crisis began in February of this year. February is before the coronavirus hit the United States and establishes quite clearly that what we have is a breakdown, a downturn, a recession, a depression, a bust, whatever word you want, of our capitalist economy, made much worse by the pandemic. But to blame the pandemic is really silly, because we know that capitalism has downturns on average every 4 to 7 years. It has had that for several centuries. The last one we had here was in 2008 and 9. So we were precisely overdue for the next one. And all we have now is the horror of watching a very bad economic downturn made worse by the global pandemic.
Now, the 1930s Great Depression was only brought to an end by rearmament and war. What's going to bring it to an end this time?
Well, we're all wondering. We're all wondering when it will end, how it will end, what the form of the ending will be. I don't think anyone has a very clear idea. We have a desperate president. In case people are not aware of this, his poll numbers are declining sharply. His opponent in the presidential race that culminates early in November is gaining on him a bigger and bigger margin, and he is behaving appropriately. The only war that's on the horizon, and clearly that is one of the options they are considering, the only serious war would be the one with China. And everything is being done by the administration here, Trump and the Republican Party, to provoke, to attack larger things, small things. It's an endless effort to basically scapegoat the Chinese. Mr. Trump refers to the coronavirus as, quote unquote, the Chinese flu, as if to blame them for the miserable performance of the United States government and private sector in dealing, or rather failing to deal, with this virus. There are saber rattling against the Iranians. There is saber rattling virtually against everybody. But mostly this president so far seems to understand that if he were to add to the current disintegration of this society an external war that a large portion of our people would oppose from the beginning is probably going to make his dilemma even worse.
From the basement tapes of the near corpse that is Joe Biden, we hear equal invective rhetoric, threats implied and explicit against Russia. We've reached a situation where in your country, God bless you all, one half of the political class has gone insane about China, and the other half of the political class has gone insane about Russia.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Absolutely. I could not put it better. I call them scapegoats. It's a way the attack on Russia begins with the defeat of Hillary Clinton. The Democratic Party establishment could not admit the colossal failures of that party, of its government, including, unfortunately, Mr. Obama, the last president. They could not admit that they had, in effect, defeated themselves. So they needed an external scapegoat. And the Russians were the convenient whipping boy. And so the Democrats became the party of scapegoating Russia. And Mr. Trump, who needed an equivalent scapegoat, especially as his regime got itself into more and more difficulty by virtue of their policies, and they found it in China. And one of the reasons, and this is of course troubling, one of the reasons Mr. Trump has turned on the Chinese is because he knows that the established Democratic Party is almost as willing as he is to scapegoat the Chinese too, and only ask in return some support from the Russians, from the Republicans, to scapegoat the Russians. As usual, the Republicans ignore what the Democrats want, but the Democrats are all too willing to join in the demonization of China. Just to give you one concrete example, the United States continues to this day to wage major war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and elsewhere against Muslim people, having killed, injured, and destroyed Muslim countries. By comparison, what the Chinese are doing, and I'm not defending it, but what they are doing in their own country is a bare footnote, if you like, on what the United States has done. The arrogance, the hypocrisy of these attacks, even now, after all that we have been through, is really stunning, and I think testifies to the fact that this is a country here, the United States, of which I am a lifelong citizen. This is a country that is spinning out of control. What you see in the statistics for the coronavirus, which are spectacularly bad here, is really, again, another symbol or sign of just how bad the situation here has become.
How bad and how entirely ineffective the political system is. There's no party, there's no person, there's no system which appears to be able to pull you out of all of this, Professor.
Absolutely. I mean, we are very many of us, and it has to be said honestly, and on a program like yours is a good place, very disappointed that Bernie Sanders and the enthusiasm and support he proved he had made the decision to fold his tents and to become the chorus behind Mr. Biden. It was a moment when you could have had a break, when you could have had an independent movement. Even when he made the decision before the virus hit, it would have been the right thing to do. But with the benefit of hindsight, seeing the disintegration that's going on now, that would have been such an independent effort. The only positive poll that thinking people across the spectrum would have turned to, not so much because it was good, but because the other two, the established Republicans and Democrats, are so unremittingly awful.
It's an honor always to interview you. I suspect this interview will go far and wide. Professor Dr. Richard Wolff, thank you very much indeed for joining
thank
us.
Thank you, George, and my best to you as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that very, very much indeed. That was exceedingly powerful, I must say. Mary says, Prince Andrew isn't allowed out of the basement these days. Poor thing. He has much in common with Biden. Maybe they can compare hair-sniffing techniques. And Ian says, perhaps he's a coward with a guilty conscience and knows the effect that showing his face would have. And JPR says, Prince Andrew was in the photo. He was there disguised in disguised as Prince Philip, whose timely death last week meant the Queen's favourite son could take his place by her side, hiding in plain sight. That's in poor taste, JPR. Long life to the Duke of Edinburgh. Liana says, Pizza Express, no doubt about it. And Limbo says, he was at home watching the video with Tom Markle, Meghan's dad. He doesn't do weddings either, apparently. And on Facebook, Richard says, don't agree with anything, with everything, George says, but have more time and respect for him than any other politician alive. Thank you, Richard. And on YouTube, Zaid says, America's a big mess at the moment. I mean, really big mess. It's time for America to concentrate on America and its people than wasting more of its last pennies on wars. And Joanne says, no wonder America's a mess. Not one political party addresses the real issues. Tony says, Prince Andrew wasn't photographed because it would be silly for him to be seen giving his daughter away when recently it's usually other people's daughters giving him away. Liam's back on the line. Go ahead, Liam.
George. Hi, George. I think we lost you there.
Yes, yes.
Basically, I heard you mention Biden there, and I think your basic point was he is a bit of a neocon, as well as the other guys. I agree with you. I think if I motivate those guys, obviously China is the enemy right now. I would be looking at, you know, sponsoring some kind of you know, I don't want to say jihadist uprising in China, but, you
know... Well, they have been. I mean, that's the... This is a point which seems to have passed Andrew Marr by. The reason there's an issue in Xinjiang province and with some Uyghur people is that an Al-Qaeda ISIS insurgency was generated by the United States in that area. I have specialist and certain knowledge on this and have done for more than 25 years. The struggle in Xinjiang province in China is not between the Chinese government and the Muslims, but between the Chinese government and the extremist Islamist factions that have killed huge numbers of people in jihad.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me, George, that the Americans are doing that, because they've got history of doing it, haven't they?
Sure.
They want to make out that, you know, obviously they, you know, the jihadists are the ultimate enemy, but they've secretly been funding them. Well, not secret, but they've been openly funding them for
the
years.
The same jihadists that knocked down the Twin Towers and murdered 5,000 Americans are the same people that we are backing in Syria, for example.
Yeah, Mr. Bin Salman as well with his hacksaw.
It's really, I think we're going to have to do a whole item on the show on this point, Liam, because it's quite clear that, you know, there are some people who believe that after killing millions of Muslims over the last 20 years, the West is suddenly concerned about the plight of Muslims in China. I mean, how stupid do you have to be to believe that?
It's like when the BNP saying that, you know, you can't be anti-Semitic and they've got the Israeli flags out, but, you know, 70 years ago they would have been on the front streets marching against the Jewish shops and Jewish businesses wanting to close them down and basically kick them out of the country, isn't it?
Exactly so. Liam, thank you for that call. Nick asks on Facebook, where is Norma the legend? That is a very good question. We didn't hear from her last week. I do hope that she's okay. Gary says, what would you think about legalizing cannabis in the UK and giving all profits to the health service? No, I'm against the further stupefaction of our country. Totally against legalizing dangerous drugs. Steve says, I don't think anyone knows what Trump is thinking. He's too dense. And John says, that's not a comet in the sky. It's Norma on her Vespa going home from the pub. Constance says, there could be an uprising in the US with its current economic and political problems worsening dramatically during this pandemic. But the question is, will it be progressive or reactionary? And on Facebook, Mark says, I wonder if American life would be better under Hillary Clinton. I never wonder about that at all, Mark, because I'm perfectly sure that the answer to that would be no. Shihab says the reason they don't want Huawei network is the National Security Agency can't hack into the network to monitor your calls. This is the main reason. Nasir says Huawei has guaranteed that its network equipment will not be compromised. So I do think it's an exaggeration to oust them out of the country. And Steve says on YouTube, I don't think Huawei will lead to conflict. Chinese are not that stupid. It's not the Chinese I'm worried about, Steve. Rogue Cow says the USA is a magical fairy bank, can print unlimited money while passing debt and crumbling infrastructure onto the poor taxpayers. And Dew, D-E-W, D-O, Dew, says, Houston, we have a problem. Let's go to David in Edinburgh. Go ahead, David.
Good evening, George. I wanted to ask you how you thought we could stop the rampage of the Scottish National Party in Scotland and how to fight this cancer of nationalism, which is tearing the country apart. You know, it's turning friend against friend, family against family, and it's a terrible time. And my fear is it's going to get worse and worse. I wonder what you thought we could combat it.
Well, very powerful call, David. I'm back in Scotland. I'm fighting the elections next May for the Alliance for Unity. You can follow us, actually, on Twitter, Alliance for Unity. 10,000 followers in 8 days. It's really taken off. There is a big public for someone to step forward and fill the vacuum that exists in Scottish politics, where the unionist parties cut each other's throats and the Scottish nationalists rule forever on a minority, very small minority, of the votes. Far more people don't vote for the SNP than vote for them. But if they're all standing against each other and failing to unite, then, of course, this endless never-endum that I talked about earlier will continue. I will be speaking, David, on Monday night at 8 o'clock on all social media platforms on Scottish nationalism, the SNP, and the coming battle for Britain. Thanks for the call, giving me the chance to say that. I didn't expect it, but it's a useful one. Julian is in Lewes, in East Sussex. Go ahead, Julian.
Rule forever on a minority. Oh,
yeah, switch the radio off, yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. So I was just interested in the fact that both the left and the right media in the United States have dumped on Russiagate. So if you look at Ara Maté on Rolling Stone's Useful Idiots channel, a great demolition of Russiagate.
And no, he's really strong on this, yeah.
He is. And then you go to the Duran, which is a conservative channel. And I'm not conservative, but they have picked up on yet more news on the demolition of Russiagate. And it is really important that people understand how bad that is for international relations, how awful that is. Anyway, it was just
well, the Russians are getting a bit of a break at the moment. It's the Chinese that are getting it more.
They are.
But it's two cheeks of the same backside, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I mean, why can't we live with the Russians, live with the Chinese?
Well, we'll
and
have
even
to.
Build,
we'll have to.
Build,
Russia.
Build.
Russia's the biggest country in Europe. Moscow is the biggest city in Europe.
Yeah.
In fact, Russia is the biggest country in the whole world. Its economy, when linked with the Chinese, which is the second biggest economy in the world, will soon be the biggest economy in the world. You don't have any choice but to live with them, Julian.
No, I want to work with them.
Exactly.
I want to live with them.
That's what we
I
should have
them.
Been doing
right.
after Brexit.
They're just people. They're just our cousins. You know, and brothers and sisters. Anyway, that's enough.
Thank you,
bye.
Julian. Thank you. Tarif is in New Orleans. Tarif, welcome.
Good afternoon, sir. I'm glad to be calling back on your show again. I want to talk about the protest that's going on in Oregon. I'm just a bystander. You know, I'm from New Orleans. I've been watching the news lately. I've been hearing that they have this political football going back and forth. What they calling these men driving around in these minivans that's unmarked. And you got people jumping out the vans, federal agencies with military uniforms on, and just taking people off the street. What the news media and Nancy Pelosi is not saying is that these men is actually protected by the Patriot Act. They're not bringing up the Patriot Act at all.
Is this the situation in Portland that you're talking about, is it?
Yes, sir. It sure is.
It's really quite horrific. It's quite horrific, isn't it?
It is, sir. I totally agree. It's very horrific. But if they go to trial with this, they're going to be protected. Those agencies, they're going to be protected because of the Patriot Act and the FISA Act, right? They need to repair those two laws.
Who's going to do that? Good. These acts got bipartisan support.
Exactly, because what's his name, Joe Biden? He helped.
Biden wrote it. He wrote the Patriot Act.
He did. And plus, he was on a 94 crime bill too, that led to the lockup of a whole bunch of poor people, black people, poor white people, Hispanics, and whatnot. And now they're putting this man up as a savior. That's not right.
Well. Is the most dilapidated savior I've ever seen. Not since El Cid was strapped to his horse whilst dead have I seen a leader like Joe Biden. Tarif, thank you very much for the call. David says, congratulations on getting Professor Wolf on your show. The man is so clear, concise, and knowledgeable. That is why I follow him avidly. Your comment, he could do worse than run for president, does not go amiss. I said more than that. I said how I wish that it was you that was running for president, and I do. Yinka says the Jeffrey Epstein story is fascinating, but it's absolutely disastrous. They abused tons of girls, probably boys as well, for decades. It was a global network of wealthy people abusing children. And on Facebook, Mo says, what do you think about the emerging Green Party? Where is it emerging, Mo? It's emerged in Ireland to prop up the worst government in living memory. It's emerged in Scotland to prop up the worst form of nationalism. It's emerged in America putting up a candidate that you wouldn't let go out for a loaf of bread to the shops. Nikki says, cannabis is not a dangerous drug, George Galloway. Actually, it is, but I don't have time to argue the toss with you. I was asked if I'm in favour of legalising it, and the answer is an unequivocal no. We've got enough stupefaction in the country already. But clear the decks, because the legend that is Norma in Bristol is on the line. Norma, you're a sound for sore ears.
George, I wish I did have a Vesper in the sky.
I thought that was a wonderful image.
Yeah, it was. I've had a terrible week. Very stressful. My computer's been hacked. I haven't even got a computer now. However,
Hacked by whom?
Oh, well, it's terrible. People have... I can't even go into it all. It's been very complicated, and I passed it over to a friend... And I think he's going to get me a new computer and everything wiped and new stuff on. It's been very stressful, actually.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. And what about your health and your husband?
Oh, fine. But listen, I want to tell you about my two dreams I had recently.
Wow.
The first was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What's his name?
Solskjaer, yeah.
Yeah, the Man United manager. He took me out... to see all the European capitals, and he was very nice to me. Now, he mustn't be smiling tonight, I don't think, because he lost,
no,
didn't he?
No, but he is a very nice man, I can tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. But the second one included you, George. This is perfectly true. You sent me a packet of cigarettes for my birthday, but there were only 3.5 cigarettes inside the packet. Which is very odd. But
that is an amazing dream. A packet of... First of all, that I would send you a packet of cigarettes.
Yeah, quite.
But secondly, that I'd nick 16 and a half of them.
Yeah, and you've broken one in half. Yeah. But anyway, what I did want to say at the end of all this is that I do hope my next dream will be for you, for a lovely, bouncing baby... for a home birth for you and your wife. So let's sort of think of something nice.
That's such a lovely thing to say, Norma. It's the baby's due this week.
Yeah.
But I've got a feeling that it's going to be in the early part of the week. It might even be... No, I might even have managed to avoid it by being at work. It's a home birth, so there's a bit of extra stress
there. I had a home birth and there was no problem.
Yeah.
No problem.
Of course, if there are no problems, it's great because you're in your own environment.
Yeah.
It's safer than being in a hospital. Your comfort and your family are all around you all the time. But it's when it isn't. It's when something goes wrong, God forbid, that you're in trouble if you're a home birth. Because then you've got to jump in an ambulance. You've got to call one, get one, and get there.
It'll be all right, George. It'll be all right. I know it will.
I very much hope so. But thank you very much indeed for your kindness. And when I see you, I'll replace those cigarettes that I nicked but didn't smoke, I can assure you. Norma, thanks. It's wonderful to hear you again in very good form. Last call of the night, I think. Ahab in Detroit, Michigan. Go ahead, Ahab.
Yes, hi, George. So I was thinking about Biden and his election as president of the United States. I think him becoming a president is just a continuation of the same old establishment.
Sure.
It's just going to drive whatever direction America is in right now in the same direction. That is a dissolution of an empire. Related to that dissolution is the state of America's economy, especially with the U.S. currency being a fiat currency. I did write something on Facebook on the show's platform saying that for every U.S. dollar that someone maintains outside the U.S. is a free dollar for the U.S. because the U.S. does not pay any money for that other than saying this is our money and we back it. With the U.S. slapping sanctions all over the world willy-nilly, if that blows back and people decide, you know what, we're going to have another currency, let's forget about the U.S. currency, the U.S. stands to lose much more than just losing trade with the countries that it is slapping sanctions on.
Do you know, Ahab, that there are currently 39 countries under sanction from the United States with a combined population of 2 billion? So one quarter of all the people of the world are currently under sanction by Washington. 39 countries. I counted them up because I began to wonder how anyone could know whether a country was sanctioned or not because there were so many of them. And it's 39 countries, 2 billion people. Can you believe that?
Yeah. I come from the Middle East, so I track those things down.
Well, are you from Lebanon?
Yes, sir, I am.
Now, they're even sanctioning Lebanon. They're even even threatening
right now,
Lebanon right now.
Yep, right now Lebanon is under pretty much U.S. sanctions, which is pretty much is starving the people into starvation. But to tell you the truth, that's not going to happen because... again, Iran is going to nullify that, and it's
already
happening.
Well, that's right. They're driving Lebanon into the arms of the people that they say that they hate. It's another example of the law of unintended consequences.
Consequences, yeah.
I had such a wonderful time. I've spoken twice in your part of the States, in Dearborn and also in Detroit. Ahab, it's wonderful that you were the last call. Thank you very much indeed for that. George Galloway, your Moat Show is the highlight of my week. I spread the gospel of Galloway every Monday morning, says Kieran. Thank you, Kieran. So I'm speaking tomorrow night at 8 on Scottish nationalism and Tuesday night at 8 on China. And you can find that on my Facebook, on my YouTube, on my Twitter, and on the Alliance for Unity Twitter feed on the subject of Scottish nationalism. It's been marvellous For me, I hope it was. For you, I've got to get home now and see if my sixth child has arrived. I hope so. But whenever it arrives, please pray for a safe delivery for my good wife. Thank you very much indeed. And whether I've got a baby or not, I'll be back here next week at the same time, in the same place, with the mother of all talk shows. May God go with you.